Hello, dear listeners. Before we start this episode, by now you will all have heard of the terrible things that are happening in the Ukraine at this very moment. Juliana and me are really shocked by these news, and we would like to ask you to consider joining us in helping out in any way that you can. Unlike Fantastic Beasts, this is not a movie and it's actual reality. People are in need of help. Our monthly PuffCast Patreon donation plus extra funds from ourselves will go to an organization that helps people in the Ukraine to get to safety, find shelter, and get medical attention. You can find a link to different organizations in this episode's info box down below. The Potter community is known for showing love and care for everyone. So let's join hands and help each other in times of need. Thank you. Hello and welcome to PuffCast, your Harry Potter charity place. This is episode 52 on March 2nd, 2022. I am Melanie.
And I'm Juliana. Why are there carrots here today?
What?
You said Harry Potter charity place, didn't you?
I said happy place.
Oh, I thought you said carrot-y. I was like, what are you talking about?
What?
I don't know. I just heard carrot-y. I was like, no. What? I was like, is there some element of this that I'm missing where we're going to talk about carrots for a while?
This is a great start.
Fantastic carrots and where to find them.
Who are you?
I am Juliana and I'm here to talk about carrots, apparently. And also... And also the Fantastic Beasts 1 and 2 movies. So as many of you, probably all of you know, the third Fantastic Beasts movie is coming out in about a month. And Mel and I are big fans of the Fantastic Beasts series. So we thought that we would do a discussion about the Fantastic Beasts 1 and 2 movies to lead into this movie release. So welcome, listeners. Hopefully you'll enjoy this very probably detailed and... wild ride, I'm assuming, what's going to happen of a podcast based on what we have in this doc.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe we start, as per usual, with our news.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. News. Okay, listeners, welcome to the mid-afternoon news. Today on the mid-afternoon news, we have a lot of things on the docket today. This week has been very eventful in the Harry Potter community, which is not a bad thing in any capacity. But we'd like to start off the top of the news hour with something not related to Harry Potter and something related... Yeah, I know. Something related to myself.
Yay.
I'm selfish. Here I am. Ha 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 ha. Me first.
We're talking about Harry Potter news, but here is something about me first.
Yeah, let's talk about me and then we can talk about Harry Potter. I'm more important. So, listeners, as many of you know, my muggle job is a dietitian, and I was lucky enough to do a guest spot on the podcast Law's Healing Garden. I spoke about nutrition in general with her and how it can make you feel a little bit better. So if that's something you're interested in, you can go listen to my episode of that, and her podcast is called Law's Healing Garden, and is the episode that is out as of today, the 20th of February. And thank you for Law for having me on. That was very nice to chat with her.
Woohoo!
Now that we're done with Juliana's selfish news, let's talk about Harry Potter news. What is our first bit of Harry Potter news, Mel?
So we have a little bit of catch-up to do because last week we didn't have the time or forgot, or I don't remember the reason.
We're just so excited to have Andre on.
Maybe that's it, yeah. So we actually got pictures of Ariana that were leaked positively. And it says that these images of Ariana were taken during the filming of the second Fantastic Beasts movie, and that she didn't appear on screen probably means that she might be instead making an appearance in The Secrets of Dumbledore. And she is really, really cute and adorable.
Yeah.
I unfortunately could not find the name of the actress anywhere, so she's unknown.
Yeah, and it's a younger girl as well, too, as we would expect from someone playing Ariana Dumbledore. So maybe we'll get more information on this coming up soon. They've been kind of secretive about the secrets of Dumbledore.
I wonder why.
I know. Hmm. Woo-hoo! They're just staying on brand. So hopefully we'll get some more information regarding that. And hopefully we're going to get a second trailer soon, too. A lot of people thought that a second trailer was going to drop during the Super Bowl the other day because we did get that Lord of the Rings drop. But nope, didn't happen. So we're all just kind of still waiting around.
Yeah. But she does look really cute. I am getting very excited about the idea of actually really getting her in the movie. So we are.
Yeah.
We all have had so many theories about her having an obscure role that's somehow connected to Credence, possibly. And we are going to see her story. And
yeah,
it makes sense because we are ending at the point where Grindelwald and Dumbledore are fighting each other. So it only makes sense that we are going to see her and learn in detail what has happened, resulting in her death in the end. And maybe we even see Kendra?
Maybe. We could. That would be her first movie appearance.
Yeah. So, very excited.
Yeah. We also do have another Fantastic Beasts-related thing. And what is that, Mel?
So, again, picking up on what we have forgotten last week. There's a new documentary coming out called The Fantastic Beasts, A Natural History to the BBC One. And this one is tied to the Fantastic Beasts, The Wonder of Nature exhibition at London's Natural History Museum. It says here that in a unique collaboration with the BBC Natural History Unit, the Natural History Museum, who helmed... Is that a word?
Yeah, I guess.
who helmed the exhibition that I just mentioned, and Warner Brothers, expect this documentary to unfurl all sorts of mysteries around fantastic beasts and real-life creatures across history that you may not believe could possibly exist. So, this documentary will show Stephen Fry traveling to multiple locations to learn more about these fantastic beasts. And as you all probably remember, Stephen Fry has actually narrated the Harry Potter audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
The Wizarding World Digital has released a trailer for this, actually, and it will air on February 27th at 7 p.m. GMT on BBC One and iPlayer. I don't know what iPlayer is, but hopefully you all know. And it will be available for streaming on HBO Max in the United States beginning April 1st. There's also confirmation that J.K. Rowling briefly appears in the documentary. I can leave a link in the info box in our episode description if you want to go and see the trailer. The trailer looked very nice. I really like Stephen Fry. Not so thrilled about the author being included in there, but...
Yeah, me neither.
But it looks very pretty, and I'm actually excited to watch it.
Yeah, no, I definitely will be excited to watch it too. But in other news, Mel, this is something that you and I are both really excited for, because we both collect these books, but the illustrated edition of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix is coming out on October 11th, and it's being published again by Bloomsbury and Scholastic, again illustrated by the lovely Jim Kay, and also Neil Packer, who I don't know if was on the other books, I can't remember.
No, he is helping out on this one, because this was a gigantic book to take on.
Okay.
I guess they shared the load.
Yeah. And just the cover alone is absolutely gorgeous. And I personally, like, extremely love these books. They are so gorgeous. And I'm just so excited, too, because the cover image has some of my favorite style that Jim Kay draws in, which is that, like, iridescent, almost, like, eerie ghost-like style. Because some of my favorite illustrations he's done are the ghosts in Chamber of Secrets. I love those so much. Just seeing this Patronus showing up on the front, that's a giant phoenix, in that same similar illustration style and coloring, really just makes me super excited for this.
I think that this is probably the most beautiful cover yet.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah,
it's so pretty.
Again, this is my favorite. This is my favorite style that he draws in. So to have this on the front, like, you got me 100%. I already pre-ordered this book. I had a Target gift card from Christmas. I was like, this is what it's going towards. Thank you very much.
If you haven't seen it yet, go check the webpage from Bloomsbury. They usually have these slightly animated moving covers of these illustrated covers. How the Patronus swoops in and how it comes out of Hermione's wand. It's just so beautiful. It makes it even more pretty. I love it so much. This is the heaviest book, right? It has 576 pages.
Yeah. Once we get all these books, I would love to see how much they all weigh together, because they are some hefty books.
I mean, this one is for sure gonna be really heavy. Yeah. Unless they have reduced the size of the text and made probably it smaller not. Or something to not make it that heavy, because just the tiniest one even is like...
is big.
They're so heavy and so big.
Yeah, it kind of stinks because these are books that you really want to read all the time and you'd want to be able to like carry around with you and read as you're going. But like physically, unless you have a giant backpack on you, there is no way.
Then again, you have these beautiful illustrations in there, and if they're only in a tiny book, it's so sad. If you have like bigger illustrations, it's so much prettier to look at. You can see much more details and all of that. So in that sense, it's probably just a book that you have lying on your table, and when you are sitting down on your sofa, you will grab it and then you will read it there when you have the time.
Yeah, perfect coffee table book for any Harry Potter lover.
Exactly.
Yeah. And speaking of books, we also have another book that's coming out that I also have on pre-order. And it is the Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore Movie Magic. And these are the series of books that they have put out, a bunch of them for the Harry Potter series, and then one for each of the other Fantastic Beasts movies as well. And they have like replica props in them. They have some behind the scenes photos. They are just fun to look at, fun to interact with, I would say. This book is coming out on April 15th. Yeah, so it's coming out the same day that the movie comes out, and we got a cover reveal for the book itself.
When you look at that cover, have you noticed something?
That the Firebuck Crab is sitting there on the front?
No, there is no Tina on this cover.
Yeah, which pretty much reconfirms the fact that she's like not even in this movie at all, which I'm going to get to this point when we get to it later on, but like I'm interested in how they're going to write her out of this third movie, because she's very clearly there at the end of the second movie.
Because also Nagini doesn't show up here.
Yeah, there's no Tina and there's no Nagini.
Bunty is not on there.
But we know we're getting Bunty, though, because we saw Bunty in the trailer a bunch of times.
So that's my point. We're having some of these characters that we know are in the trailer. We are not having it here on the cover. Not that this is like a all-revealing cover for the entire movie, but...
Yeah.
Even Newt is only shown small, and Dumbledore is the main focus of the cover. But we can now go into hours of discussing that, because we don't have time for that right now.
Yeah. I will just say that I'm just happy that my favorite main character, the Firebuck Crab, is featured on the front of this. So the fact that Tina and Nagini are not there, but the Firebuck Crab is very much so present on this cover, means that we have a new main character friend.
We still have a moment where that might come up later, so yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there's one last thing in the news.
Okay, this is something that I have been lusting over the last couple of days, because, and just stalking anyone's Instagram who has been to this, because the Harry Potter Expedition, the new version of it, has just opened up at the Franklin Institute in Pennsylvania, and that's opened on Friday, the 18th of February, and it is a fully immersive exhibition that they are doing. I would love for them to come to Boston. So if you know anyone who works for the Harry Potter Exhibition, let them know that I would like them to come to Boston, please. And thank you, because they haven't announced any of their other locations that they're going to yet. They have said that this is going to be a moving exhibition, just like some of the other ones that they've done have been.
Well, I guess then you might have a good chance, so...
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, it looks so cool. I was watching it because you get to scan in your bracelet and get your house and get your fortune read in, get your prophecy read in the prophecy ball.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, and sit behind like Umbridge's desk, and they have like a replica of the Great Hall kind of in a way. And it has all the things that we love about Harry Potter, it seems. It just looks so cool, and it makes me so excited to go see the studio tour with you, Mel, this summer. Anyone who wants to check this out, if you live in Pennsylvania, definitely go check this out. It's in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
So then we still had a couple of short responses to Buttercup's question, which was, which wand core would you choose for yourself if you could? And you know, Juliana and me would choose pizza and potato.
Yeah.
Also, our Patronuses might have morphed into pizza and potato if you have seen it on socials.
We're becoming more of ourselves, you know. Sometimes the Patronus test just doesn't give you enough options, and so we've chosen to self-select. Thank you to Andre for creating those graphics, by the way.
So, Katie was saying that she would actually choose a falling star for her wand core, which is kind of beautiful.
That's a very original one, and I like that a lot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then our friend over at Woman Who Sarcast, she said that she would like blue corn taco shells. So she is in the same realm as us, Mel, just stuffing food right into the middle of a wand.
Theresa says that she would like to have a thestral hair.
That's a good one, too, actually. I feel like... Through this and through our conversation with Andre, I've more realized that there are a lot more options out there than just the original cores that they give you. And I kind of wish that the people at Warner Brothers would expand the wand quiz a little bit, you know, and expand the Patronus quiz a little bit more, you know.
Yeah.
So, but maybe I'm wishing on a falling star, Mel.
I have a feeling that we have heard this before, that someone actually has thestral hair core.
Potentially.
I do not remember exactly, but I have a feeling there is someone. So if you listeners know, send us a message.
Yeah, let us know. Hit us up.
Then we have Andre saying that, and I love this one, I would ask for a strand of Galadriel's golden hair, and I would get 3. And if you don't know Lord of the Rings and the stories, you will not get this, so...
Okay, that was my question. Yeah.
You go and check it out.
Mel knows that I know Lord of the Rings very well. I know the whole plot. I know it so well.
Anyone out there who is interested in knowing what Juliana thinks Lord of the Rings is about, hit me up. I will send you a summary. It's insane. And this is your homework now to find out who Galadriel is and why he says that he would get 3. And why that is so important and special.
Does she live in the Morag? The giant volcano, the Morag?
You mean Mordor? No one lives there.
Gandalf lives in the Morag, which is the giant volcano that they throw the ring into.
Juliana is only referring to Mount Doom, so no one lives inside Mount Doom because it's impossible to live in there.
Well, that's why he comes out and he says, "You shall not pass," because they're stepping over his... They're stepping into his home. Get out of the Morag!
Okay, moving on, because we are on a time limit here.
I just upset a lot of Lord of the Rings fans.
Oh, we are getting hate mail from Ryan, so... Okay.
So, our last few responses we had Anna, who said, "I love my wand with unicorn hair, so I'll keep it, and we can respect that." And then Alicia said, "Earth." I'm assuming that means, like, soil, but, you know, that's kind of up for interpretation as well.
But that's kind of beautiful, too, just like
the
fallen star. So I like both of these.
I think it's interesting, too, that I know we had this conversation, Mel, because I was going to make a vegan wand out of you. But some of these wands have been... We have a lot of people who chose kind of like vegan, non-animal...
Yeah, something natural.
Something that doesn't have to come from a living being.
Yeah.
Which I think is nice.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, so news. Thank you for joining us for the news. That was the news. And this is not the news anymore. We're going to transition out of the news into the non-news section.
Welcome to the not news, but the main discussion.
Welcome to the non-news, which is also called the main discussion. Anyone who's stuck around this long already and has listened to every episode of Puffcast, God bless your soul, but here we are.
So a quick editor's note. Naturally, Juliana and me just love to talk and talk and talk. So this episode has actually become a 3-hour recording in the end, and therefore I decided to actually turn this into 2 episodes. So in this episode, you will hear all about Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. With the upcoming episode, which will follow 1 week after this one, episode 53, will be part 2, where we are talking all about Fantastic Beasts, the Crimes of Grindelwald. So now, have fun with the first part. So for this discussion, we are trying to summarize both movies, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Or Grindelwald, as I should say, actually, because I always forget that I actually should say Grindelwald, because his name is sort of German, Austrian, whatever. I always do it the English way too. Okay, keeping it to the bare necessities of these movies.
Yeah.
What we are doing throughout this main discussion, I have actually sent out several messages to some of our friends, and they all were so, so wonderful in writing back to us, even though I said you can keep it short. Everyone was so excited to answer that I got huge messages that took me several hours to work through.
Yeah.
I love you guys. It's so nice to see how much everyone has to say about the movies.
And yeah.
I can unfortunately not include every single thing that you guys have been writing to me, but I picked a couple of things that we will include here. And one thing is also Ryan actually sent us an audio message, which I cut down a little bit and into sections, which we every now and then will include in our discussion.
Yeah, it's really awesome to be able to include our community in this discussion too, because that is what Mel and I love to do. Even when it's just her and I, we can't help it. We want to include everyone.
Yes, we do. To start with this, I thought we have an overall response to the movies from us, from our friends. And shall we start first with our friends and then add our thoughts to it? What do you think?
Sure, we can do it that way.
Okay.
Our first response comes from our friend Luke, who was just on one of our past episodes. Thank you, Luke, for joining us for that. And thank you for your feedback in this episode. And he can be found at Son of Sprout on Instagram. Luke said, I really like this new era of the Harry Potter world. It feels even more immersive and makes watching and reading the original series even deeper. I definitely loved the first movie more than the second, but I think it was because we really got to spend time with Tina, Newt, Queenie, and Jacob.
Yeah.
I kind of feel that way too. We're going to get to it a little bit more down in our discussion of Fantastic Beasts 2, but that movie's a little bit of a whiplash situation and just kind of a lot of characters being there and not really being able to coddle.
The first one?
No, the second one.
The second one,
yeah.
Yes.
The first movie, it's nice because I feel like you're with the same group of people the entire time. And Luke is correct in that the second one, you don't get to spend as much time with those people, and that's kind of a bummer.
That's true, yeah. And we always have to fear that this is like more and more going away from them towards the end. They are not the main character anymore. And it's, if that happens, it's a bit sad because I love these four main characters as well. And yeah, I totally get that. Then we have a response from Patrick. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's just the German way I would say it. And I hope in Danish it's the same way. So he's one of my Danish friends. And you can find him at Harry Potter Fan Denmark. He has some really nice photos right now from his trip to London, actually. So go check that out. He writes, I really liked the first one. I think Eddie Redmayne is absolutely perfect and embodies Newt Scamander wonderfully. I absolutely agree. Mm-hmm. It was so magical to see the first movie, not knowing what we were in for, and to see this expansion of the magical world we all love so much.
Yeah, I think that Eddie Redmayne is the perfect guy to be playing this.
Yeah.
Especially after rewatching them again. This time, I really love the way that he portrays Newt Scamander and just that level of preferring animals over humans that he kind of conveys in a nonverbal way. I really think it's perfect for this character.
Yeah, I think he is absolutely the perfect choice. I know some people don't like his way of speaking, that he's mumbling too much apparently, but I find that really cute. And I find it fitting for the character, so I really enjoy it that way.
Yeah.
He should not change that.
And then we got a response from our friend Anu. Hi, Anu! Thank you for writing in to us. We love Anu. Anu said, I was really excited to see Fantastic Beasts 1. Sadly, I was disappointed because it didn't have anything to do with the characters or places I had fallen in love with, and overall, the story felt a little thin to me. I realized later that I didn't have the rich depth and details we had in the Harry Potter series because it's just a 2-hour movie, and there's not a multi-volume series of books. Valid point there.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I've watched Fantastic Beasts movies many times since, and I think I actually like the premise of the story more than the original Harry Potter stories. It is more mature and sophisticated. The main characters are actually adults, and concepts like fighting for the greater good are much more nuanced than fighting against a person who is very obviously quote-unquote evil, like Voldemort. And I definitely appreciate that too.
Mm-hmm.
The complexity as Grindelwald as a character versus Voldemort, who's just like, I am evil!
I mean, both of them feel like they are in the right, mm-hmm. but Grindelwald does it in such a
manipulative.
Yeah, and in a way that people relate to it.
Yeah, it's scary.
He has a good point, and that is the scary thing. Just the way he goes about it is really dangerous, and people easily fall for his charm.
Yeah, he's charismatic.
Yeah, and that's what makes him so much more dangerous than Voldemort. Yes, Voldemort is just straight out evil, and he's just going about and just killing people left and right as he feels like it.
Yeah.
When he's bored, you know, just beam stand. But Grindelwald is much more charismatic and smarter about it, and I think that's exactly what she means here, that yeah. it's more mature and more sophisticated.
Yeah.
And I love that about these stories as well. And I understand that we were all kind of not sure what was coming our way when they were introducing these movies to us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first idea was also different about the movies, right?
Yeah.
They thought that they would just follow him kind of like a documentary style, like he is in the bushes waiting for an Arumpin to come around the corner or something, and yeah. then analyzing them. And it turned into a complete different storyline.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. And then it looks like we have two more responses. So what did Kaylee have to say, Mel?
So Kaylee wrote, I especially love how they showed the differences between the Mecusa and the Ministry of Magic. I feel like even the negative parts of how Mecusa was represented were pretty on point for how the American government can be sometimes.
Yeah, the American government kind of sucks.
We don't like to get political in here because this is the Harry Potter happy place. Yeah. But you have a point there, at least from far away and having friends in the US and what I hear and see from their experience. I kind of get what you mean.
Yeah, there's like a it's a government that can be manipulated, and we yeah. see that in these movies with Mecusa as well. So
I mean, this happens throughout the history in every country in every corner in the world, of course.
Yeah,
humans are stupid that way.
Yes, they are.
And then we have one more response to the overall responses to these movies, which comes from Ryan, and this is an audio message that I clipped out that we are going to listen to now.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. This is me. It's Ryan from Geek Speak Podcast. I have some Fantastic Beasts and the Secrets of Dumbledore theories, questions, all sorts of things, some jazz to throw at the Puffcast, because you guys are experts. I don't like the term beast, though. I just call them creatures, beings, residents of the world. They're Fantastic Residents. That's the name of the series now. Fantastic Residents and the Secrets of Dumbledore. I really enjoyed the first Fantastic Residents movie. And when I have friends come over to hang out, I'm like, let's watch a movie. But when people that come over have not seen the first Fantastic Residents movie, I pull that out and I'm like, we should watch it. It's a fun, lighthearted movie. And it teaches us a lesson or two by the end of it. And then the second movie, I don't even know what happened in it. I know I'm not the only one that feels that way. So the fandom, it seems to me, for these Fantastic Residents movies are kind of like the Hobbit movies for Lord of the Rings. Although I think the majority of the Hobbit movies are kind of looked down upon, at least the first Fantastic Residents movie. Most people seem to enjoy. There is that. And at least you get the cute creatures in it, the residents, and they're making the movie magnificent. I don't know. It's people are just like, yeah, they're here. It's cool. I have Harry Potter, and these are a nice substitute if I want to get away from that for a moment. That's how we feel in the Tolkien fandom, is we have Lord of the Rings. We have these three beautiful movies. And then we have the Hobbit movies. And that's kind of how I feel about this. Like, people are just like, eh, it's here, whatever. My expectations for these movies are simply just to have fun for this next one. It looks fun again. It reminds me of the first Fantastic Residents movie. It really does.
Well, thank you, Ryan, for that feedback. I definitely will be calling them residents from now on instead of beasts, the residents of the magical world. And yeah, definitely I'm excited too, and I've made this known a lot, that my biggest favorite part of the Fantastic Beasts movie is the community coming back together to enjoy something together. So you and I, Ryan, are definitely on the same page with that. Just wanting to have something that the community can just rally around, you know?
So I am actually right all over the places. Just I'm agreeing on so many points with everyone, and that's gonna be the theme of the entire recording for today.
Yeah.
I was really excited after I heard that there's going to be a Fantastic Beasts movie, and you know, I love creatures. So naturally, I was very excited about it, besides having a great Hufflepuff in Newt represented as the main character in these movies. Just before the Fantastic Beasts movie came out, the first one, we had Cursed Child. And after I read the screenplay, I was very afraid what's going to happen with the Fantastic Beasts movie, because I absolutely hated the story of Cursed Child. Not talking about the play, I still can't say anything to that, I've never seen it. Just the story itself is so terrible to my own ears that it's I was bad. A bit afraid. But I was absolutely in love with the Fantastic Beasts movie. I loved the characters, I loved the story. Sure, you can always find something that is not perfect, that is not absolutely accurate to canon, yeah, but overall, I just really loved it. It was so beautiful. There are so many moments in this movie that just make my heart sing.
Yeah.
With the second movie, I was still excited. I loved watching it. I went to Sweden for it to watch it with Sarah. People were applauding at the end of the movie.
Oh, wow.
I never have experienced that in a cinema before, but people loved it. And I loved it too. Me and Sarah were a bit in shock afterwards because of the cliffhanger we have at the end that apparently Credence is not Credence and he's a Dumbledore now. And
Aurelius Dumbledore! That's not really a good Grindelwald voice, but hey, whatevs.
A lot is happening in that movie, and some of the things are very questionable, and we will go into more detail about it later. Still enjoyed it, though. The more often I watch it, the more things I find in it that I actually like.
Yeah.
I am not in the boat of completely hating it. I'm not 100% completely in love with it like I am with the first movie, but I have high hopes for the next one.
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, I feel like I watched the first movie and I was like, this is a nice, like, wholesome, good movie. Like, this is just, like, a good movie.
It could have stood by itself, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's a good little standalone by itself. And then the second movie is just, like, a weird tone shift that I was like, I don't know if this was meant to be the exact direct sequel to that first movie. So the tone shift was just like very, very, it was a big old left turn. Just kind of a wild ride. But overall, I just like these movies, again, because they just give us something as a fandom to celebrate and all just kind of get around. I feel like that's why I'm excited for these movies to be continuing on the most part. Again, like you said, Mel, it's just nice to have some Hufflepuff representation, you know, because even in the fandom now today, it's interesting. The more people I meet in the Harry Potter community, the more Ravenclaws and Hufflepuffs I know.
Mm-hmm.
But when this fandom started and when the movies for Harry Potter came out, it was just like super Gryffindor and Slytherin centric. And now it's definitely making that shift into, I think this movie was kind of the first shift in that direction where people were like, oh yeah, it's okay to not be a Gryffindor or a Slytherin. And it can be kind of cool. And I just remember after the first movie, seeing people wearing the Newt Scamander scarf everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so nice that there's not just like Slytherin. There's a, there is a mass produced non-Gryffindor, non-Slytherin scarf out there that multiple people own now. Because before, it was so hard to find Hufflepuff merchandise. Good lord.
And now we just need some gigantic hero from Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm.
Equal that up there as well, because that is still lacking. And especially get the colors right, because that is annoying. I know I have made this mistake myself before, that you use the silver instead of the copper with the blue. But, you know, get it right.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I did actually note from the Harry Potter exhibition is that they apparently got the eagle and the colors correct at that exhibition, which is very exciting. Yes.
Nice. That's so great.
Yay. I think that's our overall thoughts and feelings, and including our listeners there. So I think our next thing on our agenda is to go into Fantastic Beasts 1. And what Mel and I are going to do is we are each going to provide a summary. I have my timer up on my phone, Mel. We are going to provide a 30-second summary of each of the movies. Mel is going to take movie 1 and I'm going to take movie 2. And we're going to try and tell as many things about what happened in the plot, preferably in chronological order, maybe not. It just depends.
Yeah. So we are first going to talk only about the first movie, mm-hmm. and then later on we tackle the second movie. So yes. Here's the summary for the first movie, and I need to take a deep breath first.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Set. Go.
Newt arrives in New York by boat, loses a Niffler at the bank, meets Jacob, who's a muggle, accidentally suitcase swap, beasts escape, Murdlav! The Tina appears and Credence is a really sad dude, Graves is very fishy, they are having a secret suitcase zoo, which is amazing, the imprint, the rampant matey dance is happening, they're teaming up to find the beasts, Graves is really fishy, he's turning into an evil person, Obscurus kills lots of people, cockroaches and teapot, big battle of the Obscurus, Graves is Grindelwald,
we're done, done.
There's lots of rain and Jacob loses his memory.
Closer to a minute, but you know, hey, whatevs. I mean, there really were. There's no one giving us a penalty or anything if we go over. It's fine. I think you hit all the high points, though. I think that was pretty good. That's way better than what my summary is going to be, just going off of no notes. Good boy, wild time.
The most important part was the Murdlap, so.
Yeah, Murdlap!
Murdlap!
Murdlap! Something that easily goes forgotten that I kind of forget that even happens until I watch this movie back and I'm like, oh yeah, that did happen, didn't it?
Yeah. Everyone always forgets the Murdlap and the Murdlap is so cute.
Justice for the Murdlap. Oh boy. Well, that was good. I think honestly you did do a pretty good job with summarizing that.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay tuned for whatever the heck is going to come out of my mouth for the second one. And that movie itself is already a wild ride because Mel did a better job than I can even hope to do.
Okay, so we are focusing on the first movie for now, which is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
What are some like overall thoughts that you had about this movie?
The story about Newt himself, his struggles and, you know, the love for the beasts and having struggles with being social with actual humans. Not that I have that to his extent, but I can relate in so many ways to him because I always felt much more comfortable with animals around me and little kids because they don't judge you. You just have fun and it's nice and comforting and you can be helpful to them. And adults are scary.
Yes, they are.
Seeing the development of Newt's character from the beginning to be very awkward and very drawn into himself, and then opening up, learning so many things about Tina and about Queenie, maybe not so much about Queenie, but especially about Jacob. And in the end, standing there having three new best friends. It's just amazing to me, and just how passionate he is about his beasts. There is this scene that shows how desperate he is about making sure that his beasts are safe. And that is jumping ahead already where they are being captured and they are taking the suitcase away from him. And he's screaming at Graves, please don't hurt my creatures. They are not dangerous. His entire character is what speaks to me the very most in this entire movie. Yeah. I don't know, what is your biggest point or takeaway from this movie?
I mean, I forgot how much I enjoyed this movie, just as like its own standalone thing. The first thing that hit me was the New York accents that these people are doing. It's not necessarily the main characters, but it's the people we get at the beginning of the movie who are kind of side characters or unnamed people in the crowds. Wow, What wild choices they made on their New York City accents. I was like dying laughing. I was like, these people do not know what it sounds like to live in New York.
I can't judge that. It doesn't sound much different than whatever you are speaking. So.
Oh, it was killing me. I was dead. I was like, these people are awful and I love it so much.
It's like when I hear supposedly German people in movies, in American movies, someone speak German. It's so rare that you have someone who is actually German or who knows really perfect German. Usually they say the wrong things or have this really terrible accent.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it so much. I was laughing so hard. It's just such a wild ride. And I feel like Grindelwald specifically has some like really great one-liners. And I definitely enjoyed Newt as a character. It's nice seeing representation, like you said, for someone who isn't like the most socially comfortable. And I bawled at the end of this movie. I cried so hard at the end where Newt is like, I kept you because you're my friend. And I was like, oh my God.
Exactly. That's my point, that he opens up and then he sees that not everyone is... Sometimes it's worth it to be brave and just make a step forward to someone, you know? Like,
yeah,
open yourself up to the possibility to actually have a great connection there. I think that's what you and me do with this podcast all the time.
Yeah. Newt kept me around. Newt, why'd you keep me around? Because I like you and you're my friend. I was like, oh my God.
But that just shows also that Jacob doesn't have the greatest experience either.
No.
He seems to have been rejected many times. Mm-hmm. We know from the deleted scene that he had just been
broken up with
by his fiance that suspiciously looks a lot like Queenie.
Hmm.
And, you know, not getting the bank loan and that he's not getting any better job. He has lots of experience with rejections too, and that's why he is questioning, I guess, why did you keep me around? Because I'm not even magical, you know, like you guys. I have nothing to contribute here. But you did, actually. When you look at his character arc, he is also growing in confidence. He's going for things. And, you know, when Queenie can't open the door with her spells, you realize that, you know, magic doesn't do everything. Mm-hmm. You can still do it the Muggle way and kick the door open.
Yeah.
And he is bringing out this great character in Newt and supporting him. If I'm making it very dramatic now, I'm seeing myself as Newt and you are my Jacob because you are bringing that out in me as well. And
I mean, all I can ever hope to be is Jacob Kowalski. So honestly, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, and it's great.
I feel on the whole, this is a very Hufflepuff aesthetic movie. Just the feelings of becoming friends and opening up to each other and the connections with animals and the empathy for each other and just having that level of being kind of like quote unquote an outsider, but then also like finding your people, even though you're not strictly the norm. And at the end, everyone's just friends. That's a very Hufflepuff aura about this movie. And yeah. I really enjoyed that. That might be another reason that you and I kind of gravitate towards these movies as opposed to like other people who are maybe not Hufflepuffs, because we just feel like that connection to like the overall feelings and themes that are in these movies of friendship, defending animal rights, everyone has a right to be themselves, and all those things that Hufflepuffs really try to embody, and whether they like it or not, tend to embody and have emotions and things like that, you know, like lots of emotions, maybe too many emotions sometimes.
It's a very Hufflepuff movie. It definitely is. I totally get what you mean.
Yeah.
How do we feel about the storyline with Grindelwald being in it?
I think that that's a pretty good storyline. I honestly, the first time that I watched this movie, I didn't think that Grindelwald was Graves. I never saw that coming. And I also remember being surprised that Credence was the Obscurial and not the little girl. I think Mercy, is that her name?
Modesty.
I thought it was Modesty the entire time. And then we find out it's Credence. I was like, oh my gosh, like I was genuinely shocked. It's not hard to shock Juliana. She can read a script and then still be shocked at the reveal at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald.
She's like forgetting everything halfway. It goes through her head. And yeah, then it's
into the abyss.
I was from the beginning thinking there's something about Graves that is not right. And
yeah,
later in the movie, you know, how we keep seeing him in dark corners with Credence, I felt like, okay, something is wrong with this dude. As I said in the summary, he is fishy and he gets fishier and fishier, and then he's evil.
Mm-hmm.
Just not sure what it was. And I was definitely surprised that he turned into Grindelwald.
Yeah.
About modesty, I never thought that she would be the Obscurial. Never. Because I thought that that's too easy. They keep making it look like it. Yeah, she's singing this evil witch song, but no, it's not gonna be her. That's more like possibly Credence, because they have a really strange focus on him, that when Shaw is calling him a freak and that he should throw himself into the trash with everyone else of his family where they belong, as he says. You can just see the start of the hate in Credence's eyes, and there's something brewing. I was not sure, though, that he would be the Obscurial, or that there would be an Obscurial. We are actually finding that only out later, that there is something end. Like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised. I will also say that this movie, and the next movie we're going to talking about dark alleys and things that happen in them, fulfills our awkward hug quota for each of these movies. We get at least one good awkward hug in each of these movies that goes along with the Draco Voldemort hug.
So if someone is like really, really evil and just entirely, internally, really an awful person, they don't know what love is. So you can't expect them to be able to give good hugs. I don't think there is an evil person in the world that can give a good hug.
Well, I mean, if anything, Grindelwald and Voldemort prove this to be true, because we get that lovely Draco hug, which is just like, wow. And then we get this Credence hug, and then we also get a second Credence hug in the next movie, which is just as good.
Just the story of Credence. To a certain level, again, I can a little bit relate to him, because living, and I don't want to go into a too personal story of myself, but living in a house that is not filled with love for you is just really, really hard.
Yeah.
And it's no wonder that he has an Obscurus, because he is not loved in any way, and he keeps being punished.
Yeah.
For nothing.
Because for like stupid things. Yeah, for like showing up late.
Yeah, just because she has this initial hate for him, because she has the suspicion that he has magic in him. And I'm sure when he was...
Could be a wizard.
When he was younger, he probably showed signs of it. And now he's just suppressing it because she is pushing him so hard to suppress it. And punishing him for every tiny bit that he does, apparently wrong in quotation marks. Just seeing the anger grow in him is just... to a certain level so relatable to me, because you are reaching a point where you can't hold it in anymore, and when the Obscurus is bursting out of him, that feels like
understandable
and relatable, you know,
because anyone who's put through that level of suppression, you're gonna definitely feel a certain level of resentment towards the person who is suppressing you. And in Credence's situation, he just has a lot of tools in his toolbox to come back at his suppressor with in a very violent fashion. So, honestly, given the level of actual violence that Mary Lou Barebone puts upon Credence, I'm assuming throughout his entire life, just also the mental torture that she puts him through, honestly, his response is kind of understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that it justifies that he's actually killing her.
No, killing people is bad. Don't kill people, friends.
Also that he's killing Shaw.
Yeah.
Of course, that's completely wrong, but that just shows how deep these scars in his mental health is, so like damaged, that it's not coming as a surprise. And then you have this really violent, evil thing in you that takes over, and you probably to a certain level lose control. And I think he is probably now, when he's teaming up with Grindelwald, learning how to channel that easier and better. And before, probably just his emotions took over and the Obscurial acted on it, and that's how the death probably happened.
Yeah, and we see that from what Newt tells us, and from what we see in the movies, that Obscurials are pretty dangerous, like, just to begin with, on the whole. So the fact that he is doubly dangerous now with the Obscurial inside of him and this, like, overriding sense of resentment, kind of giving him a power boost, essentially, you can see why he'd be pretty deadly, you know?
Just heightening the intense feelings that he has and the anger. And
yeah.
Just, Yeah, making it even worse. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is a good point to bring in our friends and see what they had to say, Mel.
Yes. So we have a collection of favorite moments. And the first one comes from Kaylee. And she has the classic one, I think, that is also one of our favorite moments.
Oh, yeah.
And she says, when Queenie is making dinner for them and she's using magic to mix and cook everything right in front of them, the absolute wonder in Jacob's eyes is magical in itself.
I love Dan Vogler.
Yeah, it's such a nice scene where you see the everyday magic of adult witches and wizards that we are not so used to because we have been following Harry and his friends around. But now seeing the adult version of that is actually quite interesting because they use a lot of nonverbal spells also.
Mm-hmm. And much more complex magic too.
Yeah, exactly. And the everyday magic, like setting the table, doing laundry and that kind of stuff. We have seen that from Molly to a certain point, of course. Yeah. But it was not so pronounced in the movies, at least. But now seeing the visual in these movies is really nice. And just how amazing is it to actually prepare food like that? I am currently really struggling with making food because I am just so tired out from my burnout. Having the possibility to cook like this with just waving your wand a couple times and in a matter of minutes you have a cooked meal and
ta-da!
It's amazing. I would love to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, I love this scene too because, like what Kaylee said, this speaks to Dan Vogler as an actor, and I think he's the perfect choice to play Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
He just has such little cute moments, and one of my favorite is the giggle water scene where he just drinks the giggle water. He's like, ha! And just like laughs. I'm like, that's great. I love it.
Continuing on that scene to learn also what the differences look like in the US with the witches and wizards and concerning the muggles, that suddenly they have not only men in the house that are forbidden, but then there's also a muggle that is definitely forbidden to have contact with. The scene between Queenie and Jacob just being so flirty and cute with each other and just giggly is just so wholesome. And just Tina and Newt feeling really awkward. Especially
just being like,
So definitely a great scene.
Yeah.
Then we have a message from David, which is Crooked Ones at Instagram or wherever you want to find him. I'm sure he has all sorts of...
Yeah, I think he has a website.
One of our favorite wand makers.
Yeah.
So David writes, my favorite scene was probably when Newt was doing the mating dance with the Arumpant. Yes!
Yes!
It was quirky and hilarious. I heard that Eddie Redmayne actually had done more than one mating dance, and I would like to see some of the other versions. I'm wondering if any of them may have influenced Newt's little swivel hip dance for the Firebutt Crabs in Fantastic Beasts 3. There you have your Firebutt Crabs just for you!
See, David also believes that they are the Firebutt Crabs. It has neither been confirmed nor denied what these little creatures are, because no matter what, it seems like they're not in the Fantastic Beasts book, essentially, and technically speaking, the Firebutt Crab is not a technical beast that's in that book. So, you know,
Trust Juliana when it comes to names for beasts.
I can write my own.
I think we have established that.
I'm gonna write an addendum to the Fantastic Beasts book.
Yeah, just the commitment that he brings in doing this dance and looking like a complete fool is just so lovely and makes me love him even more that he is being chosen for this character.
Yeah. For this scene, I really loved the choice of music that went behind it. I feel like this dance was so silly, but the classical romantic music behind it really just made you feel like the rumpet was like, ooh. And just kind of counteracted what you were looking at, but in the best way possible.
I get that it was trying to get close to the rhino that was actually there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because it looks like you, just tinier and a little bit different. But how can you believe just by the smell that Newt is an Arumpant? Or Jacob, for the matter.
Yeah.
Following up on that scene where we have the Arumpant chasing Jacob is just brilliant. And how Newt finally gets the butt of the Arumpant into the case and it's slowly like going back into the suitcase, but the very last second It is still licking with its big tongue into Jacob's face, which is my favorite moment. Such a brilliant, tiny detail that took me way too long to actually see.
Yeah, that whole scene is very, very well done. Okay, and then we got some feedback from Luke, who said, "The creatures and the characters are my favorite. They feel more developed and deeply integrated into the wizarding world, and I love me some Pickett."
Yeah.
We kind of talked about this already a little bit, too, how it's much more of a mature version of the wizarding world we're used to, and we also love Pickett, too. He's so cute. I forgot how much of a personality Pickett actually has, even in just this movie.
Mm-hmm. This entire movie really makes you feel for Pickett, because the way how he's clinging on to Newt and doesn't want to let go and doesn't want to rejoin his other Bo-Truckle buddies on the tree, and how we have this heartbreaking scene where Newt is actually pretending to give him away, and how emotional this moment is for Pickett and for Newt. Newt is actually like very awkwardly wiping away a tear in that moment, that he's so heartbroken that he's doing that. Aww. Even though he didn't apparently have the intention to really let go of him and get him back in some way. I just wonder how that would have played out to get him back, if the Aurors wouldn't have jumped into the speakeasy. So how broken and sad Pickett is in that moment, letting its head hang. And But more on Bo-Truckles, we have another piece of audio from Ryan, actually.
Oh, okay.
My favorite character in the movie has and forever will be all the Bo-Truckles. They're so cute. When I first saw them in the first Fantastic Beasts movie, like many of us, I fell in love. I want my own little Bo-Truckle, and we can just have him or her ride around in my front little pocket. I'd wear pocket shirts all the time just for the Bo-Truckle. And I would get little tiny books so the Bo-Truckle could read. And if the eyesight wasn't the best, I would get constructed some little glasses for the Bo-Truckle. I think it'd be really cool.
You are too cute. I love that so much.
That's so adorable.
I want to see that.
Yeah, Ryan, send us pictures of your Bo-Truckles. We'd love to see what they look like. I loved them to have little tiny glasses. One of them must have a monocle. I want one of them to have a monocle. And he shall be called Sir Stickley.
Stickley?
Sir Stickley, the Bo-Truckle.
Okay.
I feel like I have to get my own Bo-Truckle now. I don't own one, and now I think I need one with a monocle, and I'm going to name him Sir Stickley.
I love it. Any Bo-Truckle living with Ryan would have its best life, so I hope that will happen for you.
Yes. We did have another message from David about some of the flaws that are in this movie, Mel. In regards to the flaws, David said, "It seemed to me that the spells were quite overpowered. As much as I love seeing the teams of wizards walking through New York City, repairing the heck out of everything, it didn't seem plausible that this would go unnoticed, even if everyone was having their minds wiped. The swooping evil venom as a means of erasing bad memories is also an issue, as it wasn't specified that there was going to be an effect that would only affect the muggles. Why don't the wizards fixing everything also lose their memories? Are we to assume that they felt destruction in the city was a happy memory? Is it just their excellent hats and coats that are protecting them?"
Yes.
Possibly. "And if so, why would it affect people indoors that are merely drinking water? Why did it erase all the newspaper printing? It's a cool idea, but not executed properly." And I will also say that I very much so agree with this, especially after just watching the movies too, because my exact thoughts were, one, how are the people who are fixing the buildings not getting their memories wiped, but yet Queenie has to put an umbrella over herself to not get her memory wiped?
Yes.
When she's kissing Jacob. Those two things, like, literally within the same 5-minute span, didn't really click correctly for me.
And it can't be that she is, like, shielding him a little bit from it to keep some of the memories alive, because he is later on full on wet. I mean, that couple of seconds that she is standing with an umbrella over him doesn't really do much for him. So that is a really good question, and that's why I included it here, because
that's a really good point.
That made me really think as well. They must really have some kind of repelling charm.
It's the hat.
Yeah, they must have some kind of repelling charm on them. Yeah, as you said, David, they never specifically said that it's only working on muggles.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing here is that it works on the ones in the house, because apparently the rainwater is immediately in the drinking water as well. And that's how I think that was just a quick means to get the bank Bingley, whatever. But that dude that denies the denies the loan for Jacob's Bakery.
To forget
yeah. what happened. So there isn't any leftover trouble for Jacob.
I mean, I go around drinking rainwater out of my tap all the time, Mel, so...
Yeah, if you think about it, it really doesn't make sense, but it's just to very quickly...
Yeah, explain a point.
Give it an explanation, so I think we should probably... That's just what we do, we Potter fans, though, don't we? Because we love to nitpick every tiny bit.
Well, and David's a Ravenclaw, too.
Yeah, and find every tiny explanation for it, and sometimes we just have a hard time to accept that it's just a movie thing, it's just a plot device to quickly move on, you know?
Yeah.
We don't want to accept that, and I totally feel that.
We shan't take it.
In regards to why the newspapers are changing, what do you think?
Yeah, that's weird.
That is just, I have never thought about that. So again, great point.
The people who are also fixing the buildings maybe are going around wiping the newspapers manually, possibly?
No, because we have this scene where you just see the rainwater making the newspaper wet, and that changes the picture and the line, the headline of the... No one is standing there doing any magic with the wand. You see the water soaking into the newspaper.
I would say that then there are no rules. This water plays by its own rules. It does what it wants. It said, I don't want these newspaper headlines anymore. The newspaper headline now is that this water tastes great and everyone should drink it immediate freakingly. And that water was like, yes, everyone drink water, drink it now, drink me, drink me, drink me.
I mean, everyone is also wearing thick coats, hats, and probably gloves. The chances that the water gets on your skin, I suppose that is what makes you forget when you get it in your face then, I guess.
Yes,
it has to probably have skin contact to actually get to you, because when you wear a thick coat, you don't necessarily get wet under it because the coat is soaking it all up and it didn't really touch you.
And there's a lot of coats in this movie.
Yeah, so the coats have zero memories of anything.
Yeah, the coats...
Who am I?
The coats have no idea who they were made by, where they came from, what department store they were bought at. They have no memories left, so good on the wizards for wiping the memories of all the coats in New York City.
There we go. All right.
Did you want to give an MVP, Mel?
Yeah, I think so, because then we would move on. I thought we can give it an MVP, the classic that many podcasts do. I'm not gonna deny that it's not my original idea. If anyone has listened to Mugglecast, they will definitely know what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Who do we give it to?
As we're going through this, I think just because he's my favorite character, I'm going to go with Jacob. I think Jacob is my MVP. I love how Dan Pogler portrays him. I like his character arc of becoming someone who is actually important to the storyline as we go on and shows that, hey, even if you can't do magic, you can be very useful and actually hold your weight and things like that. So I generally speaking am the person who likes the comic relief character. And Jacob very much so is the comic relief here. And so Jacob clearly is a Hufflepuff if we were going to sort him into any Hogwarts house. So I give Jacob my MVP. And Mel, who would you like to give your MVP award to?
Well, there's naturally only one MVP for me.
Uh-huh.
And that is the Murdlap. I love the Murdlap.
Yeah.
It deserves all the love. I know people think it looks ugly and disgusting and scary and terrible and whatever else people might throw at him or her or it.
Which means Mel thinks it looks cute.
I think it's adorable.
Yeah.
I love the Murdlap. I would happily take care of it.
But you have to be careful, Mel, because it might bite you.
So do any other creatures, possibly.
But you're not a muggle, you're a witch. I was going to say, its venom or whatever is in its spit is particularly poisonous to muggles.
I have been bitten by my turtle before, and when a turtle bites, they don't let go.
Oh, okay.
It happened only once, but usually he's a very nice one. But, you know, any creature can possibly bite you when they're scared of something. So it depends on how you approach a creature and make them feel safe and loved. Then they will not bite you. And I think I have a lot of love for a Murdlap, and I would be happy to take care of it. Yeah, that's mine.
Okay, So listeners, thank you for listening today. If you would like to listen to any other episode of PuffCast or give this episode a good old re-listen, you can listen to us on all platforms where podcasts are found. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at PuffCastPod. We are also over on Facebook at facebook.com/PuffCast and over on TikTok very casually at PuffCast. You can send us an email with any thoughts, feelings, any hot takes or theories that you have about either of the Fantastic Beasts movies or the third one that is upcoming at PuffCastPod@gmail.com. You can also support us over on Patreon to get exclusive benefits like bloopers, access to our Facebook group, stickers, and so much more, and also help us contribute to our charity donation that we make each month. And this past month of February, we donated to the World Wildlife Foundation in Australia. If you would like to leave us a rating and review, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, and we will read it here. Or if you'd just like to go leave us, hopefully, a 5-star rating over on Spotify, we would also very much so appreciate that. So, until next time, stay puffy
and badger on!